Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, this is really cool. It was a couple weeks ago or so, and a friend of ours is listening to the radio, and I have this great guest on this show, a guy by the name of Mark Lauder. He spoke in Bozeman a few years ago at a big dinner there. He was a special assistant to President Trump. He was the press secretary for the Vice President of the United States, and now he's got a senior position with the America First Policy Institute. So this friend of ours is listening, and she's like, oh, I just met Mark Lauder at the Republican National Convention. I got this event coming up on Monday, August 26th. I should see if Mark would want to come join us and speak at this event. And there you go. Here he is, Mark Lauder in the house. Yeah, great to see
you. Good morning, Aaron. How are you? What a much better view.
It's a great view up here
than the swamp.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So it didn't take a lot of convincing to get you back to Montana. You know, I'm assuming if this request came from some other parts of the country, you might be like, well, let me check my schedule. But you jumped on the Montana opportunity in a heartbeat. Huh?
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why even our founding fathers got out of Washington, D.C. in August and why we have an August recess. It is a swamp. It is typically, you know, 90 plus degrees, 90 plus percent humidity, no wind. And like the second you walk outside, you want to burn your clothes. Like there's no dry cleaning is going to get this. This is it's so horrible. I'm like, yeah, just go to Montana in August. I'll take it.
Yeah. I remember being there in August, you know, working for former Senator Conrad Burns and then going to Howard University and then waiting tables downtown. And when I'd have a suit on, I was like Chris Farley and Tommy Boy, like you were walking through the desert, trudging along. It gets so hot and humid there in August. But not only that, but we've got the biggest, I'd say the most important U.S. Senate race in the country here in Montana this November as well. What's your read?
Absolutely. No, I mean, I think control of the Senate rolls through Montana. That's not to say that we don't have a shot in Arizona or Ohio, but I think this is the best opportunity. And when you think about it, it really is the difference between, regardless of what happens in the presidential race, and I'm sure we'll get to that later, but regardless, you need that Senate to either endorse, support, vote for President Trump's America First agenda, or to stop a Kamala Harris socialist takeover of our country. And imagine, you know, if you get Donald Trump in there and none of the judges get confirmed, none of the justices. Every time you want to do something like unleash American energy, support our veterans, you'll have John Tester and Chuck Schumer blocking it at every stretch of the imagination. And it really does come down to Montana.
And John Tester is clearly scared. He is clearly hiding from the voters. He was at the Wilma in Missoula with his celebrity buddies. And he said that electing Kamala Harris as president is the most important race in the country, but then later backtracked and was forced to flip-flop and not endorse Kamala Harris. So he's clearly running scared right now.
Didn't even go to his own Democrat National Convention. Didn't want to be seen there.
Does not want you to know what he actually believes, what he actually supports. All right, Mark Lauder in the house. If you got a quick question or comment, want to jump in on the conversation, send us a message or give us a call.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, jumping right into it here with Mark Lauder in studio with us. Mark, I get a chance to catch up with you every now and then, thanks to our friends at Fox News Radio. But so cool to have you here in studio. Before we get into some Montana-specific stuff, it's clear that Kamala Harris is getting a sugar rush, a sugar high in the polls. The fake news media is giving her softball coverage. Over 30 days later, she still hasn't done a press conference. But what's your read on the presidential race right now? Is she doing better than expected? Is Trump still got the edge? Because there's a lot of... frankly, I'm glad that the pro-Trump crowd is nervous because you can't take it for granted.
No, absolutely. I think the big thing to do is to put this into perspective. And I always use 2020 as the baseline. So 2020 came down to 43,000 votes in three states, Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin. If you look at where Kamala Harris is right now compared to where Joe Biden was right now in 2020, she is anywhere from 2 to 7 points behind where he was, both nationally and in the swing states. So the national vote, I mean, it's fun. It's good to talk about. It's about as important as the ESPN power rankings. It doesn't mean anything, but it does give us an insight. So she's right now about 5 points back where Joe Biden was. Again, remember, it came down to 43,000 votes in three states. So if you see a 1 to 2 point shift in a demographic, whether it be blacks, Hispanics, suburban college-educated women, or anyone, all of that starts to add up in a race that was so razor-thin close. So when you see that Donald Trump now is currently polling at about 15-16% with the black vote, that's double what he did in 2020. When you look to see that he's now, you know, pulled, I think he's up by about 10, 12 points with the Hispanic and Latino vote. Again, that closes, that erases that gap. When you see out there that college, suburban women, and I would say men as well, if you see a 1 to 2 point shift because they don't like the price of gas and groceries, they don't like the wide open southern border, they don't like what they see going on in the Middle East or in Europe, all of those are significant shifts compared to an election that was decided by 43,000 votes. So Donald Trump is still ahead. It may not show it. The mainstream media won't talk about it. But when I look at the Real Clear Politics average, so it kind of equals out the biases of some of the pollsters, he's winning, and he's doing better than he was in 2020, in many cases even better than he was doing in 2016. And so to me, that indicates that, yes, we have to work. Yes, we have to work hard. We have to go out there and find every vote. But if we do that, he's still ahead.
Well, it's interesting, too. You know, the media loves polls. They love polling because it's easy to report on. It's horse race. It's more like sports coverage. It's more like sports reporting. They love throwing out the numbers, except for now in Montana. The Montana media would love any poll came out with anything. They're so thirsty for polling that they will report on anything. But we've had like three different polls that have now come up showing Navy SEAL veteran Tim Sheehy leading liberal Senator John Tester 5 points, 6 points, 7 points in a series of credible polls that were released, especially after the big Trump rally about a couple of weeks ago. But yet all of a sudden now the Montana media that loves to report on polling doesn't want to report on polling all of a sudden. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is right now, I would say that, you know, again, going by what's expected by the averages, there are 50 Republican senators right now set to take office in January. That includes the flip of West Virginia because Joe Manchin is out and Jim Justice is in. That brings us to even with five toss-up states to go, including Montana being one of the toss-up states. Any one of those five puts you over the edge. If they run the table, the vice president is the tie-breaking vote. And right now, I don't think anyone can argue anything other than Tester is losing. Sheehy is winning. We have to make sure that we deliver that. And then it doesn't matter whether the vice president is Democrat or Republican. It's going to be Republican-controlled. And the scarier thing, this is the thing that I think really people have to understand, is that with Joe Manchin and with Kristen Sinema from Arizona and West Virginia, Democrats, moderate, currently out, they're either stepped out or they're not seeking re-election. They were the only two people that stopped the Democrats from abolishing the filibuster. They were dead set against it. Kamala Harris has been on the record saying, I would suspend the filibuster to pass the Green New Deal. I would suspend the filibuster to try to codify abortion up into the moment of birth. All of those things are very real. If you do not take control of that chamber away, they will do that. They will vote and suspend the filibuster to make D.C. a state, which then would ensure that they're going to have control of the Senate for a long time to come. All of this radical stuff is really resting right now on Montana being that first line of defense, the one that we are most ahead in. Arizona is going to come down razor thin. Ohio, don't understand why. they love, for some reason, they are still enamored with Sherrod Brown, even though he is as radical as Kamala Harris and the other ones. So it really does fall on Montana to be that firewall to say, this far, no further, we are sending Tim Sheehy to the Senate.
Well, and it's interesting, too. You talked about the black vote, the Hispanic vote. You know, look, they're being hit even harder by inflation and by gas prices, the prices of groceries, everything. Well, the same thing here in Montana. John Tester is banking on the Native American vote. But Native Americans are getting even harder hit right now by gas prices and grocery prices and by the Mexican drug cartels, which are targeting our reservations. Big story in thehill.com this morning. The president of the Assiniboine and Gros Ventre Nations of the Fort Belknap Indian community basically slammed Liberal Senator John Tester when it comes to law enforcement or the lack thereof on our reservations. I'll tell you about that and more to follow with Mark Lotter, former special assistant to President Trump, now with the America First Policy Institute, here in studio taking your calls and more right after this.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So I was telling Mark Lotter during the break, I spent the weekend doing some great events. You know, I've been doing these events all across Montana, paid for by Americans for Prosperity Montana. Probably done 85 events across the state. We started at Eugene's Pizza in Glasgow, my hometown, back in, what was it, March? Went to the Farm Expo in Plentywood, Schmeckfest in Luster. We were on Lodgegrass at the grocery store, but I was in Havre, Montana, Hill County, saddled between two Indian reservations, a Union Democrat stronghold back in the day. And, Mark, I told you, I didn't know what to expect. I stepped into the octagon at the Fusion Fights on Saturday night, and I did a quick little poll. I said, we've got a blue corner, we've got a red corner. I said, guys, you can boo, you can cheer. I don't care. You're not going to offend me. We fought so that people have the freedom of speech, so you say whatever you want. When I mentioned the blue corner, in the blue corner, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and John Tester, the place was just booing, massive boos. And in the red corner, Donald J. Trump, I mean, the Ice Dome in Havre was thunderous, roaring applause. I got to get the video. I was like, wow. I mean, I expected, because, you know, typically that blue collar crowd is more pro Trump these days anyway. But, you know, I expected more of a blended crowd there. Man, I mean, that shows you how much I think, what did you say during the break, that Trump has just blown up typical Democrat strongholds, basically?
Yeah, their entire coalition, because I mean the Democrat Party is not really about anything. They're about groups, coalitions, who are oftentimes fundamentally opposed to each other. But whether it is black Americans, whether it is traditional labor union vote, whether it's the environmentalists, that's their group. And so they try to pick and choose what they're for, or more often what they're against, to try to scare those groups into compliance, into coming out and turning out the vote. And Donald Trump, over the course of from 16 to 20, now to 24, is single-handedly destroying that. So when you see Donald Trump doubling his support among the black community, when you see him moving the Hispanic and Latino community in massive fashions, labor unions, while the labor union leadership does what they always do, blindly give money to Democrats, the men and women who are actually out there doing the hard work, who are working the lines, working the rails, they're the ones who are supporting Donald Trump, because they know whether it is combating the threat from China or our jobs being outsourced to China, whether it's supporting American energy and getting prices lower, whether it is a secured border, all of these things they want, they like. And now you can't get – the Democrats are having a real trouble. That's why you've seen them go to such desperate lengths to – scare people into compliance. This is their last shot, is that you have to be afraid of Donald Trump. If you're a black voter, you ain't black if you're voting for Joe Biden, if you're not voting for Joe Biden. Or the fact that, you know, they try to scare him with union jobs, all of those kinds of things. And I think the American people are seeing through the nonsense. They're seeing through that propaganda and realizing, but wait a minute, We tried it your way. You've been in office for 3.5 years, Kamala. Why are you telling me you're going to do something on day one? Your day one was 3.5 years ago. Why do I have to wait?
Yeah. Well, and I think about it, too. So I was in Big Sandy on Friday afternoon, which is the hometown of Liberal Senator John Tester. And there are a ton of Tim Sheehy signs in Big Sandy. And we had a bunch of friends from in and around Big Sandy come down and say hi. Even had some folks from Great Falls drop in. But you know, I was talking with one farmer, and he's like, man, I wish I would have delivered my wheat on Thursday instead of Saturday, because the price of wheat just went down another 18 cents. But they're paying massive amounts because of a failed energy policy for higher fuel prices across the board. And then they're not getting the money for their wheat that they should be getting. And so, but I think about, you know, those ranchers that are listening in the Bear Paw Mountains that got to drive a further distance for groceries. They got to drive a further distance to go out to eat, and then they're paying more to eat. They're paying more for groceries. Same thing on our reservations. Lodgegrass, they've got one grocery store there. Great store, owned by great people. But that's your one grocery store. Like, if you live in the bigger towns, you got, you know, Costco, Sam's Club, Albertsons, Winco, everything. And so, but then in places like Lodgegrass, they've also been getting hammered by the Mexican drug cartels that are targeting Montana because of John Tester's open borders policies. And yet, the people that he expects to vote for him are the ones that are being the hardest hit by his own policies.
Yeah, the interesting thing, whenever I do like CNN and MSNBC or those kinds of things, I always love it when they ask me this question because they don't think I know the answer to it. Good luck with that. But they say, what will Donald Trump do to actually lower prices? The president doesn't control prices. Kamala wants to control prices, but the president doesn't actually control prices. And I'm like, well, the quickest, the easiest, the fastest thing to do is to support American energy, because whether it comes from the ranch and the farm to the factory, to the warehouse, to the point that it gets to your house, it requires energy. Whether it is fuel, whether it is diesel or gasoline, getting it out of the fields to the factory, the energy to manufacture it in the factory, the diesel to truck it over to the warehouse, the gas you put in your car, the utility bills to keep the lights on and the heat and the air conditioning inside the store. You start lowering energy prices, you will start lowering all prices, because contrary to what Kamala Harris says, right now the average profit margin for a grocery store is 1.6%.
Yeah.
They are not price gouging. Even her own Fed said they're not price gouging. It is because of the higher cost of materials, the higher cost of energy, and that's why, because of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, the price of everything has gone up. I mean, I think the average price of gas was $1.80 on Election Day in 2020. And even between Election Day and Joe Biden taking office in January, it went up from $1.80 to $2.39, $2.40. They knew what was coming. They saw what was coming. And so by just sending us a strong message to the American energy sector that Donald Trump is back, the regulations are coming off, we're going to start drilling, we're going to start exploring, and even more important, we're going to start refining again, because that's the dirty secret. The Democrats love to say oil production is up even higher right now under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris than it was under Donald Trump. Well, yeah, but the growth didn't keep up with the economy. And secondly, look at refining capability. Our ability to refine it into gasoline, into diesel, has dropped precipitously because of their environmental wacko regulations. Well, I don't know many cars and trucks that actually run on crude oil, so we're going to have to refine it.
And we got to look at rig count and the way the rig count just nosedived. And Kamala Harris has been the co-pilot during this entire nosedive as well. Speaking of our reservations, so, you know, usually I drive straight north from Billings to Malta over to Glasgow, or maybe I'll head over to the Flathead, you know, another direction. So it's been a while since I've taken this cut across through Hayes and then up to Harlem to get to Havre. And it's such a beautiful drive through the Fort Belknap Reservation. But it was interesting when I drove cut off of Highway 2 to head south down through the Fort Belknap Reservation, there was a big sign on the side of the road, and it said, "Women are sacred." And that's entering the reservation. And when I was at the Mint in Big Sandy, you know, the restrooms say Ma and Pa. And it's like, John Tester voted to allow men into girls' locker rooms and to take away women's sports opportunities. How does that go with the whole women are sacred sign that I just saw when entering the reservation? You know, it's just a question I had.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you over and over again, whenever Democrats are saying, they're doing the exact opposite. There's a friend of mine, obviously, you probably know her, Riley Gaines, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
she was in Whitefish here about a month or two ago.
She told a great story when she was testifying in Capitol Hill that her then-boyfriend, now her husband, she was number one in college, I believe, in her event in swimming in college, right? Number one in the country. Her husband was like, I think, what, 150, 200, something like that, in the men's division, same. She, every time we got in the pool, he kicked my butt, and it wasn't even close. And she was number one in the country for women. He was, you know, in the middle of the pack or somewhere, you know, down toward the end of the rankings in the same event, and yet it wasn't close. I mean, this is not rocket science. It is science. There is a difference between men and women. And we should be able to honor and protect women, not only in their privacy, but in their competitive field so they get a fair shot.
Yeah, and their kids, too, and protect their kids, too, from it. But that leads into that story from The Hill, thehill.com, that I was telling you about. So apparently Senator John Tester sent a very strong letter to the GAO, to the Government Accountability Office, about law enforcement or the lack thereof on our reservations. Jeff Stiffarm, according to The Hill, Jeff Stiffarm is the president of the Assiniboine and Grovon Nations of the Fort Belknap Indian community. He responded by saying, quote, it's an election year. He's running for re-election. He needs votes, but it should have been done years ago. So basically, you've got the head, the tribal leader here basically saying, yeah, this is nothing but virtue signaling from John Tester. Oh, he sends a letter. John Tester has been one of the most powerful senators in Washington in a one-vote Senate where one vote can make all the difference, and yet the Keystone Pipeline shut down, coal strip still being attacked, and our reservation still not even getting basic law enforcement support. But, oh, he wrote a strong letter, you know, like that's what they get.
In an election year. Because, I mean, so many times, I hear it so often when I'm out traveling the country, and I think people, again, are starting to wake up to this, whether it is in, obviously, on the reservations, whether it is in the black community, is that the only time they ever see these politicians is when they want their vote. And then they don't hear anything from them. Their issues aren't addressed. Their struggles aren't addressed. I mean, think back to last week and that Hollywood production we saw going on in Chicago. You didn't hear them talk about lowering grocery prices and gas prices. You didn't hear them talking about securing the border. You heard a lot of Trump is bad, but you didn't hear a lot anything about what they would actually do, because they don't have a plan for what they want to do, other than steal Trump's plans for no tax on tips.
Well, they've got a plan. They just don't want to tell you because Correct. It's so radical and so bad that they know that you would reject it. And what about RFK? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I thought his speech Friday was a speech for the history books. The weaponization of government, the complete undermining of our American civil liberties. Lots to talk about with Mark Lotter, former special assistant to President Trump. Quick break, back after this.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
As wildfires continue to spark and rage across the landscape of Montana and Wyoming, just an update on the Remington fire in northern Wyoming and southeast Montana. The Custer Gallatin National Forest estimated as of Sunday morning the fire to be burning more than 194,000 acres. Tragically, livestock have been lost in this fast and furious blaze. I'd like to mention that Buffalo Livestock Marketing out of Buffalo, Wyoming, has been putting together resources to help producers in northern Wyoming and southeast Montana. They will be having a rollover auction this Wednesday, August 28th, with proceeds going to help those impacted by the fire. Buffalo Livestock out of Wyoming is also one of the best spots that I have found where donations have been piling up at the livestock market, that being hay, and also coordinating donations of hay and other feedstuffs and other supplies that producers in Wyoming and Montana will need as that wildfire continues to burn in southeast Montana and northern Wyoming. Again, you can visit the Buffalo Livestock Marketing Facebook page for more details on donations. And as fires continue to pop up, I just want to say thank you to all the volunteer and professional firefighters out there helping battle the blazes on the landscape. I'm Lane Nordlund.
talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, phone lines are open for you, 406-294-0970. I've got some messages that came in on our Montana Talks app here as well. Maybe I'll go through these app messages that we've got, and then I want to play at least one soundbite from RFK Jr.'s speech on Friday, where Robert F. Kennedy Jr. endorsed President Donald Trump. Now, this is on the heels of course, Tulsi Gabbard, former Democrat member of Congress, presidential candidate in 2020. She also, of course, is endorsing President Donald Trump. And I think it's really, when it comes to the most important issues facing our country, that's what Tulsi Gabbard and RFK both recognize. What is at stake right now? Margot Cleveland has a piece at thefederalist.com. RFK Jr.'s speech wasn't Republican or Democrat, but American. She says this is about a matter of survival for our constitutional republic. Some of the messages that have come in on our Montana Talks app, Jeff in Columbus says this when it comes to veterans. One of the lines that that Chuck Schumer and John Tester are lying about in their campaign commercials is that Tim Sheehy wants to privatize all of health care and ruin the VA health care system. Here we go again, where the Democrats don't want veterans to have choice in health care. They don't want you to be able to go to the hospital in your own town. They'd rather you drive all the way across the state. So they're once again undermining choice for veterans in healthcare. And anyway, Jeff in Columbus says these people will say anything. Mark Lauder, your thoughts?
Yeah, obviously the truth is out. They will say anything. And when it comes, I mean, think about it this way. When Kamala Harris was running for president in 2019, she was so unpopular she didn't make it to 2020. But when she was so she was full on defund the police, Green New Deal, decriminalizing illegal border crossings, wanting to give illegal immigrants free health care. And now that she's running for president, suddenly she doesn't believe in any of that stuff, or she's hiding what she truly believes. There's a reason why an independent organization called GovTrack listed her as the most left, far left senator in the United States Senate, even further to the left than comrade Bernie Sanders, who literally took his honeymoon in the Soviet Union. Who does that? But she was more radical than even he was. They're trying to hide and gaslight America into believing that she is some sort of moderate when she is not. And her running mate, Tim Walz, he actually did all the crazy leftist stuff that she hopes to do when he was as governor of Minnesota.
Another message came from Dennis in Bozeman. Just my opinion, Arizona and Georgia provided proof that the 2020 election was manipulated. That said, I fear that the same thing will happen this election. I would prefer paying a little more for paper ballots and hand counting. Election integrity. I know the Trump team has been very focused on election integrity. So has the Montana, you know, Secretary of State in particular. What did we hear Friday? We had John Graves from Million Voices on the show. He said that in 2022, something like 100,000 Montanans did not show up in 2022 compared to 2020. And so my take is, look, regardless of what you think about the 2020 elections, you have got to show up here in 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it's not unusual for there to be lower turnout in midterms than it is in presidential election years. But here's the thing. Everybody always loves to talk to me about ballot harvesting and early voting and mail-in voting and where Republicans have to catch up and do more on that. And I want to finish the statement because it's important that we do obviously embrace that. But here's the question for me, from a professional political operative. Let's say we get a million votes in a state or a district. I don't care. It's a million Republican votes. I don't care if it's 200,000 early and 800,000 on election day, or 800,000 early and 200,000 on election day. It's still a million votes. What Democrats do and what Republicans need to do better about is getting out what are called low propensity voters. And so I don't need the person that you see at every GOP Lincoln Day and at all the events and rallies, because they're going to vote. they're going to vote earlier. They're going to vote on Election Day. You can almost guarantee they're going to get their ballot counted. We need to go out there and find. I saw a stat that said, I think less than roughly around half of truck drivers are registered and vote. We need to go out and find the hunters, which I've seen stats that show a huge propensity of hunters and fishermen are not registered or do not vote. Don't bring people that are always at all of our GOP events and get them to vote early. If they need to, great, help them out. Go out and find someone who doesn't think that their vote's going to matter, who doesn't think that, it's all rigged or whatever. Regardless of whether you think it is or not, get them to vote. The only way to make sure they can't cheat their way into it is to run up the score so much. Again, all of the things they did in 2020, it came down to 43,000 votes in three states.
And something like 20-some counties, wasn't it less than 30
counties? About 19 counties, yeah.
Yeah, like 19 counties. That's what decided it in 2020. And, I loved what Roseanne Barr had to say in a podcast that I listened to recently with a retired Border Patrol chief that we had here in Montana. She said, just give it a try. Just this once. Just see. You know, what do you got to lose? So, because we know what's at stake here in November. This was Robert F. Kennedy Jr. This was a soundbite that Jesse Waters snagged for his program Friday night on Fox News.
I attended my first Democratic convention at the age of six in 1960. And back then, the Democrats were the champions of the Constitution, of civil rights. I left that party in October because it had departed so dramatically from the core values that I grew up with. It had become the party of war, censorship, corruption, big pharma, big tech, big ag, and big money.
Mark Lauder, what did you think of RFK's speech?
I thought it was powerful. I mean, it was so powerful. He really cut across it. I mean, it was the same thing I said, too, about J.D. Vance being named as the Senate, as the running mate. I mean, their ability to cut across traditional party lines. It's one thing to go out there and talk to people who have loved Trump since he came down the golden escalator in 2015. I was on the 16 campaign, the 20 campaign. Obviously, I'm still close, obviously, with what's going on currently. But being able to reach across, to maybe see, to talk to people who are disaffected or disillusioned Democrats, or even to conservative voters who just don't love the way he tweets or talks, but now struggle paying for gas and groceries, don't like the open border, don't like the wars that are now raging. These are people that can actually say, look, Donald Trump is expanding our party. He's expanding the base. He's expanding into the black community, into the Hispanic communities, into our reservations, into union households, all of these things, because people realize that regardless of how he says it or how he tweets or X's now, his policies work. Things were more affordable. You were safer at home. Our country was safer. Our allies were safer.
You can vote for him. You can vote for Tim Sheehy. You don't have to tell your neighbors who you're voting for or not voting for. And then you can just turn off the TV news for the next 4 years and sit back and enjoy, you know, less war, better prices. Whether you like the guy or not, turn off your TV if you don't want to see him on your TV. But at least you got more money in your pocket.
And the thing about the election integrity, the thing that always slays me, is that Democrats have objected to the certification of every election they have lost presidentially since 1988. I mean, they protested George W. in 2000 and in 2004, called him an illegitimate president, made up stories about Dominion voting machines and people not being able to have their votes counted in Ohio in 2004. 2016, they made up Russiagate. They also called Donald Trump an illegitimate president. And yet they are the so-called defenders of democracy, the same party that was fighting and spending millions of dollars to get RFK Jr. off the ballot. The same people who just went to court and got Kona West off the ballot in Pennsylvania. They don't believe in democracy if it takes away their ability to hold on to power. They've even said, Jamie Raskin is out there saying, if Donald Trump wins on January 6th, 2025, he will file a motion to decertify his election because they don't want him to be president. They want to blow up the Supreme Court, stack the court with their justices, and they're the so-called defenders of democracy.
And yet Liz Cheney will team up with a Jamie Raskin, who wrote a book basically bashing her dad and who you know, questioned the 2000 election results. I mean, the hypocrisy of these never Trumpers is just insane. There's a Montana angle to what you just said as well. Yeah, we hear the shrieking and the shrilling democracy. And yet the Montana Democratic Party just filed a lawsuit to boot the Green Party candidate off the ballot in the Senate race. They'll funnel money and prop up a fake libertarian candidate, but then they want to remove a Green Party candidate off the ballot. I mean, the weaponization of government, the stripping of our free speech and our First Amendment rights, that's what's driving Tulsi and RFK Jr. and everybody to Trump.
Right. They think they deserve your vote. They think that they are owed your vote. Republicans will at least go out and earn it, and we're not going to take people off the ballot to try to stack the deck to win the election. Let's do it on the policies.
What was it like actually working for President Trump behind the scenes? We'll see what Mark can share right after this.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks.
Well, great to have Mark Lauder, former special assistant to President Trump, here in studio with us. And I don't know, I'd have to check with our friend Jenna to see if she still has tickets available for the event tonight, but should be a great event. So what was it like actually working closely with President Trump and with the vice president? Somebody was telling me apparently he had a big red button in the Oval Office. And it would really freak people out because President Trump would be like, do you want me to push the red button? You want me? And people would like, especially foreign dignitaries. They were like, what happens if he pushes the red button? That's what happened. So they finally would say, yeah, push the red button. And they bring in six Diet Cokes for the whole crowd.
Right? Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going off memory here. I don't remember it being a big red button, but there was a button on his phone that would do that.
Oh, it was a phone.
Yeah,
okay.
Like on the big phone that he has on the Resolute desk. Look, President Trump in real life is the same guy that you see on television. He doesn't stop. He's endless energy. The one thing I don't think he gets enough credit for, and it's really politically to his detriment, but from a leadership standpoint, it's to his strength. He surrounds himself with people who don't agree with each other. Steve Mnuchin, Larry Kudlow, Kevin Hazlitt, Bob Lighthizer, Peter Navarro did not agree on like tariffs and on China and on economic. And he heard all of them and he would listen and he would let them fight it out in the Oval Office, from a policy standpoint. Which is unusual because too many politicians, and I've worked for governors, mayors, obviously the president and the vice president, surround themselves with people who think just like them. But he wanted to hear all sides. Now, the problem was that typically the losing side or the side that thought they were losing would go run to the national media and leak that he's disagreeing with his economic advisors or his military advisors on what he should be doing. But the fact of the matter is he wanted to make sure he heard from every side of an issue. But then when he said, that's what we're doing, you go execute. That's your job. They wanted to run to the media to be more important. So it was good from an operational leadership government standpoint, bad from a political standpoint.
Yeah. One of the best stories I heard, I did this fireside chat. It was closed press with former Vice President Mike Pence. And this was just a month or two ago in Billings. And Attorney General Austin Knutson actually asked him, he said, as somebody who's battling the drug cartels, how did you help negotiate USMCA or the Remain in Mexico? How did you help negotiate Remain in Mexico with the Mexican government and the leadership at the time? And Mike Pence was sharing this conversation he had with President Trump. And Vice President Pence is talking to Trump and Trump is, looking at his phone, typing some things, And as he's typing on his phone, President Trump says to Vice President Pence, here's what I want you to tell the Mexicans. I want you to tell them that either they give us Remain in Mexico or after the first week, the tariff's going to go up to this. And then 2 weeks, it's going to go up another, blank percent. And then in 4 weeks, it's going to go up. And then President Trump hits send on the tweet. And so Trump says to him, you tell the Mexicans that. And then Vice President Mike Pence says, Mr. President, I think they got the message. I think they got the message. But he told that story to point out that they knew he would actually do it.
Correct.
That it wasn't just some empty threat. Donald Trump, they knew that he would back up his threats with action, and that's what got things done.
And so often people misunderstand him. He is the art of the deal. He is the negotiator. And the things that he says, the things that he tweets, the threats that he makes are to put him and our country in the strongest negotiation position possible. Like, take NATO, for instance. NATO has been taking advantage of the United States for decades. They haven't met their commitments. They've agreed to spend 2% of their economy on military and on their defense, and then they don't do it. But they expect us to do it. They expect us to pay to provide for their security. And Trump was basically like, well, I'm tired of getting ripped off. And if you made an agreement, you agreed under Obama to spend 2%, I expect you to live up to it. And oh, yeah, sure. We'll do the diplomatic talks and the diplomatic language that means nothing, but we'll argue about the wording over it. He's like, I don't want to argue about diplomatic wording. I want you to do it. And if you don't, well, let's see. How can I put you in a position where you're going to say yes? Well, great. I will question the U.S.'s commitment to NATO. You've questioned your commitment. You're not honoring your agreement. So maybe I should question it. Guess what? They all start paying, not all of them, but more of them started paying 2%.
And then Joe Biden wanted to take credit for it after the fact, of course.
Correct.
We've only got about a minute or so to go here. If you'd asked me 8 months ago, I'd been like, man, we're lucky we live in Montana because Washington is lost. I don't know how you fix Washington, D.C. I'm actually optimistic now. I think the Trump administration is going to be even more prepared this go around than they were back in January of 2017. But we've got a lot bigger fish to fry this go around, too. Why should our listeners be optimistic?
Because I think we are going to be more prepared. I was on that 16 campaign in the transition, walked into the Oval Office with the president the first time he entered the Oval Office as president of the United States. And the amount of work that's being done right now is astronomically higher than it was back then. We're ready to undo the damage caused by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and John Tester. We're ready to start getting back to those America First policies that worked. And we have a bunch of people who know how to move the levers of government to get it done quickly. But it's going to take Tim Sheehy in the Senate. It's going to take Troy Downing in Congress. It's going to take more America First leaders, because you can't get it done by yourself, even as president of the United States.
And Ryan Zinke in that Western District, that seat's been gerrymandered. Democrats hope they can pick up a win there, but I think Zinke's going to pull off an even bigger win than he did the last go around. But hey, you can't take anything for granted. All right. Mark Lauder, great to see you. Look forward to seeing you at the event later today as well.
Always good to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us here in studio. Let's see, what do we got coming up here later this week? I might have a very big story for you on our Montana Talks website here later today. You're going to want to.